comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at Talk Radio like nowhere else on Earth. It is the show where you matter. I apparently made a mistake yesterday on the graphic. It showed on the website, it showed Thursday, when in fact it should have said Wednesday. I do apologize for that. Been a hectic week around here. You want to put that on your calendar, though, because you want to remember the date I made a mistake. And, you know, that'll be a date to remember now. And if you believe that, I've got some oceanfront property out in Phoenix, Arizona, I'd like to talk to you about buying. Anyway, we are going to be doing something really pretty cool here tonight. I haven't done this in a long time. Used to do this a lot, and those who have been listening to this show from way back when we first started, you know that I used to do this a lot. But what is it? Well, here it is. Tonight is sort of going to be a little mini seminar tonight. I'm going to present some information to you that is pretty heavy information. And we're going to be taking a look at whether it's even plausible or not. Now, one of the reasons that I don't do this much anymore is because, well, first of all, in 2005, I began taking calls from the audience. So we had to make room for that to happen in the schedule, and that meant there just wasn't room to do this much. But another reason is because so many people who listen to the show cannot separate in their minds the presentation of information from the presentation of somebody's beliefs. And so, you know, every time I do this, I get lots of emails saying, well, you know, if you believe that, blah, 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 blah. You know, I don't believe anything. I either know it, or I say, you know, I don't know. We need to investigate more. Belief is something that is part of religion. But look, people tell me this is not true when I tell this, but I know for sure it's true. The word believe and the word faith in the English language come from all the same root words in Latin, and those words come from the same root words in word in Greek. Believe and faith are exactly the same thing. And so I don't faith anything. What I do is I either know it or I say, let's investigate more. So I'll get some of that email, and that's okay. But tonight we're going to present information. We'll be back right after this. right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And as I said, I'm going to be presenting some really, I think, fascinating information here this evening. It's fascinating to me. I hope it's fascinating to you. Just to sort of stitch up what I was saying and finish up with what I was saying in the beginning of the show, you know, anytime, especially if you mention anything that's in the Bible, there are people who say, oh, well, I just don't want to listen to that. Okay, fine. And then there are people who listen and hear what they want to hear, not what you say. And then I get piles of email from people responding to what they wanted to hear and thought they heard, and yet if you go back and listen, it's not at all what I said. So, but that's just one of the hazards of speaking about anything that it has anything at all to do with anybody's book that they consider to be holy. Okay? It's just a hazard. There's no way for us to really talk about this without mentioning a couple of things that are in the Bible. So here's what the deal is. You are aware, because we've talked about this, and a lot of you are aware of it anyway, but we've talked about on this show the petroglyphs that are located all over the Southwest in the United States, and I've done a little mini documentary with Walter Bosley on petroglyphs that are out on South Mountain, south of Phoenix, and we've discussed what those petroglyphs depict, what they mean, and so forth. Well, there are also some other petroglyphs that have been found around, actually on five different continents. They are petroglyphs, but they're not of the same ilk. They are very ancient, but they're not of the same ilk. Now, what people who are watching our TV channel are seeing is a picture of a petroglyph wall, if you will. It's a big slab of rock. And this is over in the state of Colorado. Now, these petroglyphs are different in that these petroglyphs do not show us a lot of animals. They don't show us what appear to be shaman priests and rituals and things like that. These appear to be some kind of abstract writing. And in the last part of the 20th century, a handful of archaeologists discovered that there's sort of a collection of these symbols that are appearing in many, many, many places, not just in this place in Colorado, but in many places. And in fact, they have found those same symbols in petroglyphs on five continents. And so they determined that this must be some form of very ancient alphabet, some form of very ancient writing. And so they began to try to decipher what these things meant and what they were all about. Now, the people that have been studying this have come to call it first tongue. And because that's what they call it, that's the terminology that I used in the graphics about the show tonight. Now, I'm not really sure that this is the first tongue, but it may be. It certainly would be very, very, very ancient, if not the first, certainly pretty close to the first. And some of the people that have worked on this have been able to translate it. They've been able to come up with what these symbols mean. And they appear, as I say, on five continents. The question is it possible? You know, we've asked this question before. How is it that there are pyramids in Egypt, there are pyramids in China, there are pyramids in Bosnia, there are pyramids in the United States, there are pyramids in all over South America, there are pyramids everywhere you go. There are just pyramids everywhere. And then those pyramids all seem to be aligned to certain astronomical formations or constellations, and they seem to all be laid out very precisely. And so we've asked the question, how is it that people in South America, separated by thousands of miles of ocean from people in Egypt, and separated by thousands of years, built pyramids with the, you know, orientation toward various stars and so forth? How is that? Was there some type of common civilization at some point? Well, when you start talking about what was the first language that people spoke, that's one thing. When you find it on five continents, that's another thing. How did that happen? Now, there's really only a couple of possibilities there. One possibility would be that whoever it is that spoke this language and wrote this language grew into a great seafaring nation, and they went out all over the world, and they carried their language with them. That's one possibility. I guess there are three possibilities. Another would be that they became a great empire, and as such, as a great empire, people were coming from all over the world to trade with them, and because they were so powerful and rich, everyone had to speak their language. And so they learned their language and carried it back home with them. That's a possibility. There's another possibility. And the possibility is that the language really goes back to the first times. I mean the real first times here on Earth for humans. The geologists tell us that there was a time here on this planet when all of the continents that we know today were not continents. They were all compressed together in one giant landmass, and they refer to it as Pangaea. And, you know, the geologists say that's the case, and you've all seen where those models, where they, those animations where they scoot the continents back together and they fit together like a jigsaw puzzle. Still today, they all fit together. And you compress them back together into one great landmass and you have Pangaea. Well, if you had a Pangaea, the people who lived on Pangaea didn't have to travel across oceans to get from what is today Beijing to what is today Caracas. They didn't have to travel across oceans to get from what is today Moscow to what is today New York. It was all land, and they could just travel. And if that's the case, if Pangaea really existed, and you had one people, you would have one language. And as those people spread out across this one giant landmass, and they started new families and new tribes and new villages and built new cities, you know, they would be there on that landmass when the Great Divide happened and when it began to split apart. Now, the geologist would probably tell us that the division of the Earth into continents took a long time. I don't think it did. I think it happened rather suddenly. Now, if we look for clues in ancient documents as to did that happen and how did it happen, there's not a lot. There are a few mentions of it. One of the mentions, interestingly, is in the Bible. A couple of things. First, in Genesis chapter 1, where it talks about creation, it says that all of the land was gathered together in one place, and all of the oceans together, all the sea, all the water together in one place. That's a description of an earth that is Pangaea. All the land in one place and all the water around it. There is another mention that we're going to take a look at here in just a moment. But what we're really looking at is this language that has been discovered. And is it possible that it is the first language that was spoken before the languages all got mixed? You know what happens if you move from one place to another? You begin to talk in time like the people in the second place. You move from A to B. In time, you begin to talk like the people in B. If there are no people at B, you're the first person there. In time, you and your descendants will talk differently than the people at A, where you came from. Because you don't have that constant interaction with them every day. So as the earth split apart, that one language would change, wouldn't it? But a lot of the symbols, a lot of the alphabet, would remain for a long time. A few changes here, a few changes there, but basically the same. Is there any evidence for this? Well, there is a story. Now, what we're going to do is deal with that story and work backward. There is a story that's contained in Genesis. Everybody's familiar with it. It's called the Tower of Babel. What you may or may not know is that Babel is not a Hebrew word. Yes, it is in Genesis. Yes, Genesis was written in Hebrew. But it's written at a time when the story of this Tower of Babel is already ancient history. By the time Moses or whoever sat down and wrote this, the event was already ancient history. And it did not happen to Hebrews. It happened to someone else. The name Babel is actually, as I said, it's not Hebrew, it's ancient Assyrian. This Genesis account is written in Hebrew about a time and a people that were already ancient history, as I said. And there's yet another great event more ancient than Babel. Now, what happens in this story of the Tower of Babel? First of all, do you know Babel is actually how it's pronounced, Babel? What it means is gateway of God. So, if you talk about it in a spiritual sense, it's a gateway to God. If you talk about it in a technological sense, was this an attempt at building a stargate? I don't know. I do know that this ancient word, Babel, means gateway to God. Now, it's actually not Babel, it's Babil. Babil, B-A-B-I-L, in ancient Assyrian. So how did it get to be Babel? Well, because a Hebrew is writing it. And he Hebraized The spelling. We do it all the time. The real name of the capital city of Serbia is Beograd. But in the United States, we say Belgrade. Now, which is it? Well, it is what the people there call it. The fact that we in the United States say Belgrade doesn't mean that's the name of it. The proper name of it is Beograd. We in the United States talk about Paris, but that isn't what the people there say. They say Paris. Which one is it? Well, it's the people who live there who give it the name. And the correct name is Paris. And I know I didn't even say that correctly, but that's as close as I can get. Paris. The name of the country I'm sitting in is United States of America, and in Mexico they call it Estados Unidos. Which one is it? It's United States of America. And that's not Mexico, that's Mexico. And when you go from one language to another, the language gets bastardized. And the pronunciation gets bastardized. And so we say the Tower of Babel. Some people say Babel. And that's more bastardization of it. The real name is Babel. And it's not actually even mentioned that way. It's not mentioned under that Tower of Babel. That's not in the Bible. That may surprise you. We'll be back with more of this information in a moment. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about this really pretty cool discovery and a lot of work that's been done on a discovery of this ancient alphabet, ancient language, and they're calling it first tongue or first language. It's found on five continents, and you'll be surprised where this leads. But the question is, was there a time, is it even possible that there was a first single language? And what we're looking at is the possibility that yes, there may have been. Now, the story about the Tower of Babel, we were talking about that. The story about the Tower of Babel is in Genesis chapter 11, and it's the first nine verses. And it talks about the city. The Tower of Babel is not even mentioned. The Tower of Babel is not mentioned. All the references are to the city and its tower. That's the way it's referred to. The city is built by this guy named Nimrod. And it is called Babel, Gateway of God. And apparently, according to the account that's in Genesis, the goal was to build a tower that could reach to God. Now, there's in modern times, there's a lot of debate about, you know, did they really think they were going to build a tower tall enough to get to God? Is that what they had in mind, or are they really trying to build what we call a stargate? And some people think, well, that's way around the bend. Well, everything in the universe is way around the bend, if you haven't noticed. So I don't know which way to go on that, but those are the things that people talk about. But in Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 through 9, it says that God looked at this and he said, wow, if we let them continue, and that's pretty interesting too, if we let them continue, nothing will be impossible to them. So let us go down and destroy this tower and frustrate their language or confuse their language. Now, some people think that we get our word babble. Someone is just babbling, or people are babbling. They think we get it from the name of this city. Well, maybe. But you see, the Hebrew word for let's go down and confuse their language isn't Babel, it's Balel. So what we're dealing with is the name of the city, Babel, but the event that took place, according to Genesis, is the languages, they got confused. The languages got mixed up and confused there. Okay? Something happened before the building of the city of Babel. What happened, and this was ancient history by the time Babel was built, and what happened is this Pangaea split apart. So you had one world, one people, one language, if what Genesis says is true. And well, let's take a look at what does it say. The great event that took place prior to the Tower of Babel is an event marked by the birth of a child who gets named for the event. It's in Genesis chapter 10, and this happened hundreds of years before, maybe 1,000 years before. We're not sure. But it was ancient history by the time Nimrod built Babel. And in Genesis chapter 10, it says this, "And unto Eber were born two sons. The name of one was Peleg, for in his days was the earth divided. And his brother's name was Joktan," or Joktan. And why is this important? Well, because you had one people, one earth, one world, one planet, one language, if what Genesis is all about is true. And then it all got divided. But you still had one language. Wherever the people were found, there was one language. Just one language. Until you get to Babel, if what Genesis says is the truth. And when you get to Babel, then something happens that causes the language to diversify. Up till then, it was all the same. And so it becomes diversified. Now, even today, you know, there are groups of languages that are very, very similar. And in what we refer to as Semitic languages, they're all very similar. The writing looks different now. The words are pronounced a little bit different now. But there are great similarities between the languages, between Arabic and Hebrew. There are a lot of similarities. Between ancient Chaldean and Hebrew, ancient Hebrew, many similarities. It's sort of like, say, Italian, Portuguese, and Spanish. Now, if you can read and write any one of those languages, you may not be able to speak one of the others, but you can read what they write and you can make sense of it. You might not get every little nuance, but you'll make sense of what they're saying. And I know that because I speak Spanish pretty well. I speak Portuguese okay. I can sit down and read either one of those or Italian. and make sense of it. The same with, I speak Serbian, and so I can do this with related languages like Macedonian and Bulgarian. I can make sense of it. I know what they're talking about if I don't get all the nuances, but I still can make sense of it. So apparently, if what Genesis has to say here is an accurate record, and, you know, as I said, what he's writing in Genesis is ancient history to him. So if it's accurate, then yes, there was a time when there was a one world continent, Pangaea, and yes, there was a time when there was one language, and there was a time when Pangaea split up, and there was a time when the languages split up and became confused. So if we started Babel and worked backward, we're working backward into one language, and we're working backward into a period of time where you have people who all spoke that same language scattered all over Pangaea. They didn't have to cross oceans to get wherever they went. It was all one big landmass. But it split up and separated them and continued to separate them. And the ocean that surrounded Pangaea, of course, filled in the voids between what are now continents. That might explain why, maybe, I can't say for sure, but it might explain why this language that we took a look at, this alphabet, shows up on five different continents. I mean, it's at least plausible, isn't it? It's at least within the realm of plausibility that's why. Well, these petroglyphs found in Colorado have been not just these, but the ones found all over the world have been shown to have existed over a long period of time, and they date back to the oldest ones to around 1700 BC on the petroglyphs. But that's where the story really gets interesting. The story really gets interesting because it's not just on the petroglyphs. This language has been found somewhere else. And it's been found etched on copper plates. It's been found etched on buildings, not just on stone walls out in the middle of the desert. It's been found related to a specific kingdom. And that's where it really gets interesting. And in fact, it even has been linked to the guy, and this is what's interesting too, the archaeologist that, you know, all those movies about Indiana Jones? Well, the real archaeologist that Indiana Jones is patterned after is involved in this story. Can you believe it? The actual guy that the Indiana Jones character is modeled on is involved in this story. Dr. James Harris is an archaeologist of some renown. He's from Brigham Young University. And he identified this language as being an alphabet of something sort of proto-Canaanite. In other words, before Canaanite. Well, those are Semitic languages. In the 1990s, there was an amateur archaeologist, and he's also a retired space engineer, and he discovered the same collection of symbols in another location. And he began to work with Gary Vay. Gary Vay of the website ViewZone. And Gary went out and photographed, made a lot of photographs of these symbols. And he posted them on the ViewZone website. And whenever they were posted on the website, way across the world, there were people paying attention. And something happened around 2000, maybe early 2001, and that is a very, very significant find. What they found was that was so significant was not in the United States. It was in Yemen. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. All right, let's jump back into this. Before we get into what happened in Yemen, and this is going to blow your socks off. Now, some of you may already be aware of this. But before we get into that, you need to know that those writings in Colorado, the ones that really kind of got the ball rolling here, were translated, and they speak of some event possibly related to the sun, which is prophesied to make a big change in human civilization. But there are parts of this that are missing. Now, for those who are watching on our TV channel, you're seeing a picture of those petroglyphs. That has been enhanced so that the petroglyphs are showing up in white. If you were to walk up to that stone, it doesn't look like that. All those symbols are there, but they're not white. That's been enhanced so you can see it photographically better. Okay, now, the parts of that stone are chipped off. There's parts of the story missing. But it speaks of some event possibly related to the sun, which was prophesied to change human civilization. Well, in 1999, Gary Vay started posting these photographs on his website, and they began to spread around the internet. He began to publish articles about what had been translated and so forth. In 2001, he took an expedition with historian and linguist John McGovern. Now, John McGovern he lives in Australia. Now, why did they do this? Well, because when all of those photographs hit the internet, it really raised interest around the world, and people started paying attention, and then something was found in Yemen. There was this big piece of stone that had been part of a larger wall that had been discovered in Yemen years before, and it was in the museum in Yemen. And the symbols on that looked very much like the symbols in these pictures that Gary Vay was publishing. And so photographs started flooding in from archaeologists and historians and from Yemen to Gary Vay. And he was able to put together this expedition to Yemen. And they were able to get there and to photograph lots and lots and lots of artifacts. Now, where did that stone come from? The one in Yemen. Well, what had happened, and you may remember this, this huge piece of stone had been found at the site of the newly discovered palace of the Queen of Sheba. Now, for a long time, historians, and particularly religionist revisionists, had been saying that that whole thing in the Bible about Solomon and the Queen of Sheba was fiction, that there was no record that there had ever been a Queen of Sheba. Who was that? Well, Sheba, again, remember what I told you when you go from one language to another? Is it Beograd or is it Belgrade? Well, the real name is Beograd. Is it Sheba or something else? Well, the real name is Sheba. Not Sheba, Sheba. So they found the palace, the ruins, of the Queen of Sheba. And that's where they found this very interesting and large stone with the, it has the same kind of figures on it, the same kind of symbols on it, that were found on that, in those petroglyphs over in Colorado and on five other continents. And that's just amazing. It's kind of mind-boggling. Well, because they had a great deal more of the language to work with, and because of the fact that it's arranged more like writing instead of just scribbled onto a stone out in the wilderness, it's arranged like you would write a language. So it has some order to it. It's not as chaotic. They were able to translate this, and it's very interesting. It tells a very interesting story. This is what will knock your socks off. It is the story of the Queen of Sheba, or Sheba, her son, and I believe his name was Melanik, his father, Solomon. Solomon had given a ring to Melanik and made him swear an oath. The ring was a sign of this oath. According to the translation that they were able to decipher, he swore an oath to always stand for the protection of the Ark of the Covenant. Now, some of you are saying, I know where this is going. This is that story about how it got to Ethiopia. Well, yes and no. Sort of, but not quite. Because this translation tells that after Solomon's death and the kingdom was overrun, which it was temporarily overrun and sacked, the temple was sacked, and the priest took the ark to a hiding place. And because of this oath, the son of Sheba and Solomon went back to the kingdom of Solomon, located the hiding place of the ark, took it back to the kingdom ruled by Sheba, his mother, dug a deep pit, had a walled cell built in this pit, and put the ark in that. And then he had it covered over with sand. Later, when invaders came to that area, because of his oath to protect the ark, he entered into that cell and had his servants cover it over completely with sand and said, I will not come out until a friendly nation is here. Now, the translation is fabulous. The translation of this whole thing is pretty detailed. And what happens is his mother is of course, concerned. She's heartbroken. There is a little peephole that she can look into this chamber, and she can see lightnings and thunderings, hear thunderings taking place. She can see her son is in there. He's alive. She can see that at times he's trembling. And then all of the thundering ceased. She couldn't hear her son moving about, couldn't see him moving about. And after another long period of time, she opened the little peephole, and a worm crawled out. And she took this as a sign that her son was dead. But he had said that he was never coming out until a friendly nation had arrived. And so, according to the translation, his mother reinforced, she had the sand removed, reinforced this chamber, and had it covered over again. And then it uses some pretty interesting words. It says, she dimmed her kingdom and moved to Ethiopia, where she had constructed a model of the ark and a model of the chamber as a remembrance of him. Now, this very ancient text, this very ancient tablet, tells this story. And we've all heard about it being in Ethiopia. If this text is true, I'm about to show you a picture of where it really is. We'll be back. The kingdom of the Queen of Sheba, the Queen of Sheba, the palace, was discovered by Wendell Phillips. Wendell Phillips is the archaeologist, the person that the character Indiana Jones was based on in the movies. Especially in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Isn't that interesting? He is the one who found and began the excavations of the palace of the Queen of Sheba. But the translation, of course, of this very ancient language that goes as far back as any language goes, at least any language we've discovered. They're calling it the first tongue. Maybe it is. I don't know. But the translation says the Queen of Sheba dimmed her kingdom, and that's a quote from that text, dimmed her kingdom and moved to Ethiopia with the prohibition that the area where the ark and her son Menelik were buried should be forgotten, lest future hostile nations and, quote, blind prophets should seek it out. Well, in Ethiopia, she built, or had built, a model of the ark, a model of the chamber, and in commemoration, had it guarded and protected as a kind of a monument. Today, in Ethiopia, that is what, if that text is correct, then that model, not the real ark, but that model of the ark and that chamber, is what is being protected by the Coptic Christians there. And you've all seen the documentaries on television that show that and that make that case. But according to those ancient texts, that's a model. And the real one is located hidden under the sand in a chamber in the old kingdom ruled by Shabbat at the old palace. An aerial view of that place is now on the screen for those who are watching on our television channel. And, you know, it's is this really the burial place of the Ark of the Covenant? Well, the University of Calgary went there to investigate. The University of Calgary did a lot of studies, a lot of research and investigation with ground-penetrating radar. And guess what? They did find the chamber that's mentioned in those very ancient stone writings. They found it. It is there. But then something happened. September the 11th, 2001. Those events changed the world forever. Suddenly, that area in Yemen, this palace area is in Yemen, and that area became inaccessible to Westerners. Yemen is one of the most armed countries on the planet, if not the most armed, it's one of the most. There's 3 to 4 AK-47s for every male living in Yemen. Children as young as 8 years old have their own AK-47s fully armed with ammunition. And Westerners are not welcome there now, generally speaking. And the expedition and the excavations had to stop. And the courtyard of this palace, the courtyard is where the chamber is located, and it never has been excavated, so far as we know. Isn't it interesting? This very ancient language that no one even knew existed until the 1990s tells us a story that brings us to a location that has plausibility. Plausibility. I'm not saying that this is exactly true, that this is where the ark is. I don't think anybody can say that till they dig into it and find out. However, it has plausibility. And it has corroboration. And why would it be important? Well, haven't we on this show been talking about what's the deal with Yemen and the Gulf of Aden? What's the deal there? Why all the interest? Why are all those ships over there? What's the deal? There are certain groups of sects within Judaism in Israel, who insist that they are going to rebuild the temple, and they're going to do it on the site where it once stood. Of course, the problem there is a mosque on that site now, and has been there for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so that's a problem. But in order to build that temple, they have to have the ark. Without the ark, the temple is just a building. the purpose for the temple was to house the Ark of the Covenant. Without the Ark of the Covenant, or if you will, God's box, without that, it's not a temple. If there's credibility to the story that I've related to you tonight, then you can see very easily and very readily that Yemen and that chamber in the palace of Queen Sheba would be of extremely high interest to them. Not only do you have this group in Israel, this sect of Judaism that is just hell-bent for leather to build the temple, and they have to have the ark in order to do it. You also have a group of people who are a sect of people in the Christian community who would hands down favor retrieving the ark and rebuilding the temple right there where that mosque is. Not all of Judaism supports that plan or that view, and not all of Christianity supports it, but there are people in both Christianity and Judaism that do. There are nations that want their hands on the Ark. Remember in that Indiana Jones movie, remember how the Nazis were trying to get their hands on this Ark of the Covenant because they believed that it had some type of great power, that all by itself, it just emanated power, and they wanted their hands on it. Well, that was a fictitious movie, but that belief that it has power is pretty pervasive. That belief that it does have some kind of power exists both in religious communities and non-religious communities. And so there are nations that would like to get their hands on that power. There are nations that look at that ark as being an artifact left here by, or designed by and then built by humans, but designed by extraterrestrials. There are nations that have that view. There are militaries that have that view. Now, I cannot say that's the reason why there's all that activity in the Gulf of Aden, right off the coast of Yemen. I cannot say that that's the reason. What I can say is it's plausible. There's plausibility to it. It seems that it could make sense. Nothing else really seems to make sense about the Gulf of Aden and all those ships and all the activity that's over there. Nothing else really seems to make a lot of sense there. But this is plausible. It may not be the case. It may be way off target, but it at least has plausibility to it, doesn't it? And there it sits in Yemen. Here's what we know. What we know for sure is that this ancient text in stone, and by the way, on some copper plates as well, has been translated, and it tells this story. We know for sure that the palace of Queen Sheba has been found, partially excavated. We know for sure that the story says that the ark is in a chamber in the courtyard. We know for sure that the University of Calgary did ground-penetrating radar investigation and found that chamber. It does exist. We don't know if the Ark of the Covenant is in it. Everything has led right up to going in and seeing. But nobody has been in to see yet. It hasn't been fully excavated yet. But it's plausible because of that string of information. It's plausible, isn't it, that the Ark of the Covenant may be in that location. The Ark of the Covenant may be buried in that chamber under sand in the palace of Queen in the palace grounds of Queen Sheba. Just like the ancient texts say. And if that's the case, it is plausible that that's the reason there's so much interest by the nations of this world in the Gulf of Aden, because that's right at the coast of Yemen. That is plausible. Now, that's something we need to watch. That's something we need to see over time if it pans out. We don't know that it will. I'd like to know what you think about this, and you may have some additional information on it, and so I'm going to open up the telephone line for you. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. That's the main number here in the studio. The toll-free number in the USA and Canada is 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free number for you, but I do have the flash message for you, and it's not for Canada or the USA. If Canada and the USA, you use the flash message, I'm not going to read it on the air, even if I do get to see it. Probably won't get to see it. Because we have telephones for you, and I even pay for the call, okay? So the flash message is for folks outside the USA and Canada. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Tracy from Canada.
Hi, Tracy.
I was wondering, you didn't mention how they did the translation. Did they find another language next to one of the tablets, or?
Well, it's not a totally unrelated language. I kind of touched on it, but maybe I didn't explain it too well. It's sort of like if you read, write, and speak Spanish, and then you pick up a book that's written in Italian. It's a different language. It's not the same, but it's similar enough that you can get the gist of what they're saying.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And so this is not Arabic. It's not Hebrew. It's not Assyrian. But it's close enough to these ancient forms of those languages that they were able to painstakingly piece together what was being said.
Okay, I get it now. I missed that.
Yeah, and but, you know, they didn't even know this language existed until the 1990s.
But they found pieces of it all over the world.
Yeah, and see, lots of people have seen, for instance, that big slab of stone in Colorado that's got petroglyphs on it. Lots of people have seen it. But nobody had ever really looked at it and said, you know, that's not like the other petroglyphs. The other petroglyphs show dogs and deer and snakes, and that looks like some kind of ancient writing. And in the 1990s, a professor from Brigham Young looked at it and said, that looks like writing. That's not like the other petroglyphs. And that's what got the ball rolling.
Wow, it's incredible. The Ark of the Covenant is one of my favorite, I guess, historical pieces. So I've done a lot of research.
It is pretty mysterious, isn't it?
And things like that. Yeah, it could be so many things.
Yeah.
What I found odd is, now, I didn't think the actual Ark of the Covenant is in that one chamber in Ethiopia. But the strange thing is, all of the men that are chosen to watch it die very quickly after they take over that position. And they have burns on their bodies mm-hmm. that looks like radiation burns.
Well,
so I'm wondering if they have a piece of it or something that traveled with it, not just a model.
Well, a few years ago, a scientist here in the United States, his name is Ron Milioni, he's been a guest here on this show, decided, he and a group of a few others decided they were going to construct an ark exactly as it was described in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to stop because when they got to a certain point, it was charging up.
Oh.
And so whatever the purpose is for the ark, when you build a model of it, if you build it exactly as it was stated in the Bible, it apparently charges up. And they couldn't handle it anymore, and they discontinued and dismantled it.
Wow, really interesting. Great topic tonight.
Thank you. And you're in Canada?
Yeah, I'm in Ontario.
Ontario. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks, Kevin.
Uh-huh. 623-444-5889. That's the main number here in the studio. It will work from anywhere on the planet and probably a few other planets. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi, Kevin. Is it possible that we've seen an increase in what we call the New World Order moving forward with their agenda and different things of that nature? Is it possible they are doing that because they may have found this thing and it has, they either know some knowledge from it or, you know what I'm saying? Is it tied in with that, you think? Because what got me wondering that is because you talked about it being one language and all that back when it started, you know, back in Babel, however you want to pronounce it.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like with this New World Order, they're going to like one religion and I would assume one language and different things. So maybe this is helping to increase it.
Well, I don't think they've got their hands on it. I think that they want their hands on it for the very reasons you're talking about. But I don't think they've got it. If they did, we would have already seen global government sweep across this world like a tidal wave.
Okay. Well, and another thing, like, was it Tracy that just called in?
Yeah.
But mentioned about the people dying, and in the Bible it mentions about people that touch the ark would die and stuff. Why doesn't someone, if they have the wherewithal to build this ark, why can't they learn how to protect themselves to go into the ark like the priest did, so that someone can go would be able to find its secrets?
Well, that's a good question.
The
priest had to wear special clothes. And I read a paper on that where apparently that was all analyzed by some scientist, and he wrote this paper. And I read this years ago, but apparently the clothing that the priest had to wear insulated the priest from whatever energy was coming off of that ark. And he described in his paper how that would happen, how that would work. And I don't remember all the details because it's one among hundreds of thousands of papers I've read over the past 10 years.
Okay.
I exaggerate. I probably haven't read hundreds of thousands, but I've read probably 100,000. And it's just one of the many I've read, but I remember reading that he had analyzed what the Bible says about the clothing that the high priest had to wear when he went into the ark.
Okay, one more question. Have they, what made this thing charge up? Because as far as I know, it's made from natural materials, right? So if anyone else made it, it would just, there's a lot of gold in it. I remember that.
I don't know scientifically what would make it charge up, but the term free energy comes to mind.
But that would be based on like the shape, or they put, what was it, four things inside the ark, but I don't see where those would have anything to do with the energy.
Yeah, I can't answer the technical questions on that. Perhaps if Ron Milioni is listening, and he does sometimes, perhaps he can call in and give us the technical issues on that. But it did charge up.
Huh. Now, one more question. I'll let another caller. Have you heard any more? Are we still active over there in the Gulf of Aden, or doesn't anybody really know?
As far as Navy ships being there and ships from all over the rest of the world are there, yes.
Okay. How do we know those Navy ships are there when no one actually has pictures of them?
Well, reports from the way I'm getting information is just reports from returning service people who have been there and who say who's there, what's there. You know, they don't talk about what's going on, but I think pretty reliable when, you know, returning service people say, well, we were there and we saw the Russians there, we saw the Chinese were there, and, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, good topic.
All right.
Kevin, this is very interesting. So.
All right, man. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. 623-444-5889. That would be the number to call. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Perry from San Luis Obispo, California.
All right, Perry, you want to hang on through the break?
Sure.
All right, hang on. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and on the line with us is Perry from California. Perry, had to cut you off right when you just got started, but thanks for the call, and what's on your mind?
Yeah, Kevin, I was sitting here listening to what you were saying, and I'm piecing in my mind like bits and pieces of one of the things I've studied. one of my favorite things is this old prehistorical stuff that's very hard to find information on.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read a number of books by David Hatcher Childress, which are, I think it's called the Lost Cities, Ancient Cities and Lost Civilizations series.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, on the one that's about Arabia, he went into this topic on the Ark or the Covenant, and I think that you need to get him on your show because I'm not going to remember everything he said, but I think that the gist of what he was saying is that that somebody has actually gone through the ruins and has not found. Now, I could be wrong on that, but
not the ruins in Yemen. Nobody has excavated the courtyard where this chamber was found with ground penetrating radar. So they may have been all over the palace, but if they haven't excavated that courtyard where the chamber was found, then they haven't been in where the documents say the Ark is.
That may be true. I guess my call in tonight is to sell David Hatcher Childress. I hope you can get him on your show.
He's quite an interesting individual. We've tried to get him on before, and it was just scheduling problems. We'll try again.
Yeah. I really enjoy this topic. I'm going to be listening to the rest of the show. Thanks a lot for sharing all this information, Kevin.
All right. Thank you for the call, Perry. 623-444-5889. Toll free in the U.S. and Canada, 888-223-4599. And then if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can use the flash message feature, or you can call us. All right? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Okay, nobody there. And back to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Yeah, you're a little choppy there tonight for some reason, on the phone anyways. If, you know, like you said, that, a few religions believe that, to come back and not to come back. It would be completely devastating to anyone who believes in Jesus, because, once his blood was spilled, and then the veil to the, I can't think of the name of the place where the covenant was. It was ripped from the top to the bottom, so all persons could boldly go themselves before God. You didn't have to be Levi anymore, and et cetera, et cetera, and no more blood sacrifices. So, if they would find this, and or Israel would rebuild the temple and start sacrificing again, this would fly in the face, of a lot of belief systems, and Jesus, and once and for all, God wouldn't accept any more blood sacrifices because, his son did it. It would be totally...
Well, according to that belief system, yes.
Right.
But you have... that belief system, of course, would be basically the theologically conservative Christian belief system, which would not be the belief system of Orthodox Judaism. Orthodox Judaism would view this as they view, in case you don't know this, Orthodox Judaism. And that is the really straight fundamentalist Judaism views Jesus and Christianity as enemies, and they use that word every day on talk shows in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, I realize that.
All right, so according to their belief system, this would be good and proper and, and by the way, if you, I don't know, and I don't need to know, but if you happen to subscribe to the theologically conservative views of Christianity, then your text, your Bible, says that that's exactly what's going to happen. That they are going to find it, they are going to rebuild the temple, and they are going to reinstitute sacrifices.
Yeah.
And so, is it true? Well, that's in the land of belief. And people are free to believe whatever they want to believe. But that is a prophecy that's in the New Testament. And so, I just find it very interesting that here in the 1990s, a language previously unknown is discovered. And corroboration of the accuracy of that text was provided. In other words, it's corroborated. Sheba did exist. She had a palace. And they did corroborate the fact that there is that underground chamber at the palace. And then 9-1-1 took place, or 9-11 took place, and everybody had to leave. Nobody has been in to excavate that chamber.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yep. Terry, thanks for the call, man.
Yep.
All right. 623-444-5889. Or toll free in the U.S. and Canada, 888-223-4599. Got a flash message from Paul in Australia. He says, that hat is so cool, Kevin Smith. 10-10. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. That hat is a gift from one of our listeners, and I'm glad you like it. All right? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
My name is Jeff. I'm calling from Montreal, Canada.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Kevin. Great show tonight. I just wanted to get your opinion on a few comments. Just quickly, regarding time and man and science, I've heard you say before in previous shows way back when that you didn't put a lot of faith in science when it comes to man, because the first thing, I think, or just paraphrasing you, you would say that as soon as man steps into the equation, the science is flawed right away.
The problem, here's the core of the problem I have with scientists when it comes to telling us anything about mankind, how long we've been here and all of that, where we came from. The problem I have is no one was here. I mean, no living person today was here when it happened. And everything that we have is theoretical. But they've reached a point now where they're teaching their theories as if it's concrete fact. It is not concrete fact. And
with global warming, it's not in. You can't even say the science is in. You can never proclaim something like that. You can't claim the science is in on gravity, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
So I quite agree with you. And with regard to religion, you know, or spirituality, I remember watching a documentary called Zeitgeist about 2 or 3 years ago, and it totally shook my quote-unquote Christian foundation to the point where I started questioning my faith. And I just wanted to go back to what I said the other night when I said I believe in Jesus Christ. I don't believe in Jesus Christ. I know Jesus Christ. So I just wanted to rephrase that.
Well, see, there's a difference between spirituality and religion. Spirituality comes from within, and religion is man-made. All religion is based on some theological precept, some belief system. Well, who writes theology? Humans.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Okay, so all religion, 100% of it, all religion, whether you're talking about Christianity, Buddhism, whatever you're talking about, it's man-made. And I'm not an enemy of religion, as long as people who are religious understand that it's man-made, and don't, you know, don't try to project to us that it's anything other than that. Now, spirituality comes from within, and I don't have any problem with that. But I have a problem with other people doing my thinking for me, and that's what theologians do.
Well, you know, again, it's manipulated, the whole thing. I mean, that's why I have a problem when I just look at the quote-unquote Bible itself. Some Christian scholars will say there are things missing. Some people will say that's the word, and you have to have the King James Version, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I really, really try to stay away from that that noise.
Yeah, but let me give you something. When they start telling you got to have the King James Version, they've never even seen one. The so-called King James Version that everybody that has one is carrying around is not right. The King James Version. It's the fourth revision.
There you go. So
okay. The original King James Version reads almost like Middle English, which is very similar to German, and most people couldn't read it.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, and you know, again, we've been lied to and conditioned to believe one thing, and that it's a white Jesus on a cross, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I really just try to stay away from that and just keep my, sort of focus on that faith, I guess, that something higher or greater than my own self exists out there in that universe, and then it's something's working. And I wanted to thank you for covering this, because it's certainly eye-opening, and I just don't trust the science either, you know, for these people to say. I mean, they've hidden so much from us, and then when they show something to us or reveal something to us, nothing is by accident. Everything is for a reason, and I always now question why.
Yeah, what's the reason? Yeah.
Yeah.
Why now, and why are you telling me this, and what are you not telling me as you tell me this? Yeah.
Correct.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right.
Good night.
Good night. All right. 623-444-5889. 888-223-4599 is toll-free, and we have the flash message option as well. We'll be back right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and let's go right to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Jackie from Florida.
Hi, Jackie.
And hi. How are you doing?
Good.
Well, I'm really enjoying all of the information tonight. It's wonderful. I really appreciate your research and your efforts. And it brought to my mind, and I'm sure you were the one who had him on, the scientist from Canada, his last name was Hutchinson.
John Hutchinson, yeah.
Yes, remember that he had built a replica of the Ark of the Covenant?
Yes, he was one of the people along with Ron Milioni.
Okay, because I remember going to those sites back when you had him on, and he got some results when he tried building that thing, as I recall.
Yes.
And also, a friend pointed out to me that he, I think it's on eBay, he has his anti-gravity lab for sale in case anybody out there wants to, like, delve into anti-gravity. And for $10,000, he'll teach us all how to work it. I got a real kick out of that when I read it. So I just wanted to share and remind people they could, like, look at his stuff on the Ark. That's something about the construction of it and being of gold and all that, all those good things. There is something there.
There is indeed. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Yeah, you know, the phone lines are open, by the way. If you want to call, we have a couple of minutes left. Look, there's regardless of what you think of the Ark of the Covenant in terms of its religious values, it is technology. And it's advanced technology. The proof of that is in what you just heard Jackie talk about and what I mentioned with Ron Milioni and John Hutchinson. They were working together on that. Patrick in Australia has sent me a flash message, and it says, well, don't know why that happened, but now it's not happening. All right, Patrick in Australia says, good day, Kevin. I wonder if anyone has ever gone looking for pieces of the original Ten Commandments, which Moses smashed. It would be interesting to see which language it would have been written in. Excellent show. Thank you very much. Cheers, Patrick. You know, that Patrick, I think that's something that I've never even thought of. I've never even considered, you know, what about the pieces of those tablets of stone that Moses is said to have smashed? Where are they? And what language is written on them? And how is it written? Because the story that's in Genesis, I'm sorry, in Exodus, about how those came to be written, the story is they were written with the, quote, finger of God. So it might be interesting to see how that would look. And I don't think that's anything I've ever even considered. 623-444-5889 if you wish to call. 888-223-4599. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. Tony from Denver.
Hi, Tony.
What do you believe would happen if you were to open up the ark?
I don't know. I'm not going to. I saw the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark. Remember what happened when they opened it? I'm not going to chance it.
Well, is the ark a creation of aliens or gods with a little g?
Well, you know, the only information that we have about the construction of the ark and its origin is in the Bible. And in those pages, the design of the ark is given by God to Moses. So Moses has it built, but humans built it, but the design was given to them by God and by Yahweh. All right, so God is an extraterrestrial. That irks some people when I say that, but look, God's not from here. If God exists, he's not from here. So if he's not from here, he's extraterrestrial.
The Patali.
Do what?
The Patali level or the Patali level of aliens?
Well, you know, those are belief systems as well. And but at the very core of it, he's not from here, so he's extraterrestrial. Therefore, the design that was given to Moses is of extraterrestrial origin, but it was built by humans.
Well, another great show tonight, Kevin. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. Let's see. If you call right at this minute, I've got time to take the call, but if you wait another 30, 40 seconds, I won't have time because we won't have time to hear you and then respond. This whole thing, I think, is fascinating because This whole story takes us to a time when there was one continent, one people, one language, as well as possibly to where the ark may be. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Brian from Burnaby.
Hello, Brian.
Hi, Kevin. I was just sort of looking up Pangaea, which you mentioned at the beginning there, and in Wikipedia it mentions it's in the Mesozoic area, and that's about 250 million years ago. Were the humans at that time our ancestors, or were they humans from another place? Because that
well, we have found manufactured objects from 600 million years ago. Now, that's something, that's what they call uparts. They don't want you to know that because that does not fit Darwin's theory. But we have found manufactured objects. There are fossilized sandal prints, shoe prints. Fossilized sandal prints from 300 million years ago. So this is not an ape-like creature. It's something that knew how to build sandals and knew that it was good to wear them.
Well, I was just thinking, if the humans were, in fact, let's say, our ancestors from other planets or other star systems, they would, of course, all have one language at that time because they would come from the same place, I was thinking.
Possibly, yeah. You know, this whole thing opens up a whole bunch of new questions, doesn't it? And it answers some, but it opens up a whole bunch of new questions. I think this language, the existence of this language, pretty much proves that the Darwinian timeline is way off. And I give Darwin credit where credit is due. And, you know, I'm not saying that everything Darwin thought was wrong, but that timeline is way off.
Yes. Another point I wanted to mention, Kevin, was that there was a Woodhenge apparently found next to Stonehenge in England just recently. And that's another interesting thing, whether it was a mock-up or whether it was another equivalent place of solar observatory, I don't know yet, but it seems very interesting. It's just been discovered.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, one of the theories is that was the you know, architects build a model of the building before they build the building. And you can walk in their office and they'll have that model sitting in their office of what the new building is going to look like. And one of the theories is that Woodhenge may have been a, as you said, a mock-up, a model of the Stonehenge that they were going to build. And I've been waiting to see, I read that theory, I've been waiting to see if anybody has pushed it any farther to come up with a yes or a no on that theory. Hey, thanks for the call. We've hit the end of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.